All right, let's jump into another deep dive. This time we're going deep with Dr. Leslie Allen and his lecture series on Lamentations.
Oh, this one's a good one.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorites so far. We're focusing on session 13.
Okay.
Where he dissects chapter 5, verses 8 through 16.
You know, it's incredible when you think about it.
What's that?
I mean, we're not just listening to some academic break down a text, you know, like we usually do.
Right.
It's almost like we're right there with this community as they're wrestling with the aftermath of this brutal war and occupation.
I know.
Like centuries later, their pain, their confusion, you can just feel it.
It really does leap off the page, doesn't it? And it makes you wonder, like, how much has really changed? People today, they face their own traumas, you know, personal, collective, whatever. How do they process that grief? How do they find solace? I mean, maybe Lamentations can give us some clues.
Yeah, maybe it can. You know, Dr. Allen, he points out that chapter 5 is like a turning point in the book.
Oh, really? How so?
Well, up to this point, it's all been these gut-wrenching laments, expressions of sorrow and despair.
Right, right.
But here in chapter 5, something shifts. The community, they're guided by this mentor figure and the personified figure of Zion.
Hold on, hold on. Personified figure of Zion. Break that down for me. I haven't exactly been spending weeks poring over Lamentations, you know?
Right, of course. So in this context, Zion, it's not just a place. It's like this poetic representation of Jerusalem, like the heart of their community, their identity.
Your faith.
Exactly. And when you picture Zion as like a person who's grieving, who's urging her people to pray, it just adds this incredible depth.
Wow, I never thought about it like that.
Yeah, it really adds another layer to the text. And speaking of prayer, that's another big deal here.
How so?
Well, because up to this point, they've been paralyzed by grief. They've been so lost in lament that they haven't really been able to act.
I see.
This prayer, it's like a spark.
Okay.
A refusal to just give in to sorrow.
Like a glimmer of hope amidst the suffering.
Exactly. It's like they're finally finding the strength to lift their heads, to look beyond the immediate devastation.
So let's get into the nitty-gritty then. In verse 10,
yes,
the community cries out, "Our skin is black as an oven from the scorching heat of famine."
Powerful imagery, right?
Absolutely. But then Dr. Allen throws in this curveball.
What's that?
There's actually a debate about how to translate that line.
Isn't that fascinating?
It is. What are the options?
Some scholars, they think the blackness is literal, like they're actually being burned in an oven. Some even suggest it's a reference to cannibalism.
Whoa. Okay. And the other option?
The other interpretation, it's metaphorical.
Okay.
That the blackness describes the scorching fever that comes with starvation.
So like a burning from within.
Precisely. And that's what makes Dr. Allen's approach so great. He doesn't just give you one answer.
Right.
He lays out both sides.
And are both equally valid.
Well, that's up for debate. But the point is, he really makes you think.
So which way does he lean?
He doesn't really say. But what's really interesting is how each interpretation changes the overall meaning.
Hmm. In what way?
Well, if it's literal, it really emphasizes the brutality and desperation.
Like the sheer horror of their situation.
Right. But if it's metaphorical, then it highlights the internal burning agony they're going through.
It's almost like choose your own adventure with the text.
Haha, you could say that.
But regardless, it really paints a vivid picture of their suffering. And Dr. Allen goes on to unpack verses 8 through 14.
Right, where he talks about the upheaval of their society.
And this is where things get really interesting, because this social breakdown, it's not just an ancient phenomenon, right? This happens all the time.
All the time. It's a recurring theme throughout history.
So what exactly was happening in Jerusalem at this time?
Well, Dr. Allen, he points out that slaves were now in charge. Elders weren't respected anymore. Men were forced to do tasks that were traditionally done by women. And the city gate, which was once this bustling center of activity, it's deserted.
Wait, slaves were in charge. How did that even happen?
Well, think about it. The Babylonian conquest, it would have completely disrupted the power structures. Local leaders, they were probably killed or exiled, creating a vacuum.
Ah, I see. So it's not like they were actually in control, per se?
Right, but it speaks to the chaos of the situation.
Like their whole world was turned upside down.
Exactly. Imagine the people you rely on for guidance, they're gone. The social norms, the rules you live by, they mean nothing anymore.
And even the work you do, it's been redefined.
And all of this, it adds another layer of trauma on top of everything else.
That's heavy stuff. And it makes you think about how modern societies deal with these kinds of breakdowns, like after a war or a natural disaster.
It's universal, sadly. Whether it's refugees fleeing conflict or communities dealing with the aftermath of a hurricane, that loss of social structure, it just intensifies the psychological impact.
Makes you realize it's not just about rebuilding buildings, right? It's about rebuilding lives.
Exactly. And then, if that wasn't enough, verse 11, it brings up another horrific reality of war.
What's that?
Sexual violence against women.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Allen doesn't shy away from that, does he?
No, he doesn't. And he shouldn't. I mean, it's a stark reminder that the wounds of war, they run much deeper than physical casualties.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, how can those scars ever really heal? You know, both individual and collective scars.
Well, that's a question that continues to haunt us, doesn't it? It's a horrifyingly persistent tactic, this use of sexual violence in war. And it's not just about physical domination either, is it?
No, it's about breaking someone's spirit.
Crushing communities, leaving wounds that can echo for generations.
It's just awful. And you can feel this sense of utter loss throughout their lives. Dr. Allen points to verse 15, where the text talks about the silencing of music and dancing.
Imagine that. This culture where music and dance were so vital to their identity.
How they expressed their joy.
Exactly. And now it's all gone. Just silence.
It's a powerful image. And it makes me think about how crucial art and expression are for healing.
Especially after a trauma like this. It makes you wonder, what happens when those outlets are taken away?
Yeah, like their pain is balked up with no healthy way to release it.
It's heartbreaking. And then Dr. Allen, he talks about the fallen crown in verse 15.
Oh, right. What's his take on that?
Well, he suggests it might not be a literal crown, you know, symbolizing the loss of their king.
Interesting.
He thinks it might be a festive garland,
huh.
You know, highlighting the loss of simple pleasures.
I see. So whether it's a crown or a garland, it really points to this theme of loss that permeates everything.
Exactly. Loss of leadership, loss of identity, loss of joy.
And it's not just about material things, is it?
No, it's about losing those things that give life meaning.
And then, just when you think it can't get any heavier, Dr. Allen brings up verses 7 and 16.
Oh, yeah, those are rough.
He calls them the punchlines. Why is that?
Because they go beyond just complaining about their situation. They're about acknowledging their sin as the root cause of their suffering.
Wow, that's a big statement.
A huge shift in perspective. Suddenly, they're not just victims of circumstance.
It's like they're complicit in their own destruction.
It really makes you wrestle with the idea of personal responsibility and collective guilt.
How do we make sense of tragedy? Especially when it feels so undeserved.
It's easier to blame others, to look outward, isn't it?
It's a natural response. But these verses, they challenge us to look inward.
To examine our own role in the events that have unfolded.
So it's not about blaming ourselves.
No, it's about understanding the complex interplay between our choices and the consequences.
And those consequences can sometimes affect entire communities.
And yet, what's remarkable is that this acknowledgement of guilt, it doesn't lead to despair. It actually opens up a path towards healing and hope.
So how do we connect this ancient text to our modern world?
That's the question, isn't it?
I mean, we face different challenges, but the themes of suffering, guilt, hope, they feel so universal.
They are. Think about how we cope with suffering today.
Therapy, support groups, social movements.
All incredibly valuable tools. But I wonder, do we shy away from the harder questions sometimes?
Like guilt, responsibility, forgiveness.
It's uncomfortable, isn't it?
It can be. But what if, like the community in Lamentations, we embraced those difficult questions?
What if we saw guilt not as something to be feared, but as an opportunity?
An opportunity for growth, for change, for a deeper understanding.
It's about becoming better individuals and building a more just world.
That's a powerful thought. So it's not about dwelling in guilt?
No, it's about using it as fuel for transformation.
I love that. All right, so we've covered a lot of ground here.
We have, from lament to a glimmer of hope.
And this idea of confronting our own darkness.
It's a journey, isn't it?
It is. But we're not done yet.
No, we're just getting started.
Dr. Allen, he ends this lecture with a little cliffhanger.
Oh, I remember that.
He says the next session will focus on verses 17 through 22.
Which offer a glimpse of hope for the future.
Even after all this devastation, there's still hope.
That's the amazing thing about the human spirit, isn't it? Even in the darkest of times, there's always a spark.
I can't wait to dive into that next time. But for now, I think we've given our listeners plenty to think about.
I agree. It's a lot to process. But it's important, this stuff.
It is. So until next time, keep those minds working.
And keep exploring. Yeah, it's a heavy question. And, you know, it makes you realize that the wounds of war, they go so much deeper than just the physical casualties, right?
Absolutely. I mean, how can those scars ever heal? I mean, both the individual scars, but also, you know, the collective ones, the ones that a whole society carries.
It's a question that haunts us even today, doesn't it?
It really does. You know, it's a horrifying thought. But this use of sexual violence is a weapon of war. It's a tactic that's been used throughout history.
Unfortunately, yes. And it's not just about physical domination, is it?
Right. It's about so much more than that.
It's about breaking someone's spirit. It's about shattering communities. It's about inflicting wounds that can last for generations.
And this feeling of loss, it permeates every aspect of their lives. Dr. Allen, he goes on to point out verse 15.
Oh, yeah, where the text describes the silencing of music and dancing.
You know, for a culture where music and dance were so deeply ingrained in their identity.
in how they expressed their joy.
Exactly. And now it's all gone. It's just silence.
I mean, can you imagine that? To have those outlets for joy ripped away?
It's a powerful image. And it makes you think about how important art and expression are for healing, especially after a trauma like this.
Absolutely. And when those outlets are taken away, when you can't even celebrate or find release through music and dance.
It's like their pain is just bottled up. There's no healthy way to express it.
And Dr. Allen then moves on to the symbolism of the fallen crown mentioned in verse 15.
Right. What's his take on that?
Well, you know, he suggests that it might not be a literal crown, you know, like the kind a king would wear.
Interesting. So what else could it be?
He thinks it might be a festive garland.
Oh, okay.
You know, a symbol of celebration.
Oh, I see.
To highlight the loss of those simple pleasures that were so important to them.
That makes sense. I mean, whether it's a crown or a garland, it really underscores this theme of loss that permeates the entire book.
Exactly. Loss of leadership, loss of identity, loss of joy.
And it's not just about losing material things, right?
No, it's about the loss of those intangible things that give life meaning.
And then Dr. Allen kind of throws us a curveball.
Oh, yeah, he does, with verses 7 and 16.
Which he refers to as the punchlines.
And boy, do they pack a punch.
They really do. So why does he call them that?
Because in those verses, the community acknowledges something profound.
Oh.
They acknowledge that their sin is the root cause of their suffering.
Wow. That's a huge statement.
It really is. It's a complete shift in perspective. They're not just victims here.
They're acknowledging that they played a role in their own destruction.
Exactly. It's heavy stuff, and it makes you think about our own responsibility, both individually and collectively.
How do we make sense of tragedy, especially when it feels so undeserved?
Right. It's so much easier to blame others, to look outward and point fingers. But these verses, they challenge us to look inward.
To take ownership in a way.
Yes, to examine our own role in the events that have unfolded.
So it's not about blaming ourselves necessarily.
No, it's about understanding the complex relationship between our choices and the consequences that follow, and how those consequences can ripple outward, impacting entire communities.
It's a sobering thought for sure. But you know what's striking is that this acknowledgement of guilt, it doesn't lead to despair.
No, not at all. It actually opens up a path towards healing.
And hope.
Yes, hope. It's like a turning point. Remember, this whole chapter is about the community finally finding its voice, finding its strength.
So how do we connect this ancient text to our modern world? I mean, our problems might look different, but the themes of suffering, guilt, hope, they resonate so strongly even today.
They absolutely do. They're timeless. And it makes you think about how we approach suffering today. We have therapy, we have support groups, social movements.
All important tools for healing, for sure.
Absolutely. But I wonder if sometimes we shy away from asking the harder questions, the uncomfortable questions about guilt and responsibility and forgiveness.
It's definitely easier to avoid those conversations, isn't it?
It can be, but, you know, what if we took a page from Lamentations? What if we embraced those difficult questions?
What if we looked at guilt not as something to be feared, but as a catalyst for growth?
Exactly. As a chance for real, meaningful change. It's about becoming better individuals and building a more just and compassionate world.
I love that. It's not about dwelling in guilt, but about using it as fuel for transformation.
Exactly. It's about acknowledging our imperfections and then using that knowledge to create something better.
That's really powerful. It's about finding the strength to move forward, even when it feels impossible.
It's about remembering that even in the darkest of times, there's always a possibility for hope, for redemption, for a brighter future.
And that's a message we could all use a little more of these days.
Absolutely. It's a reminder that even when we feel broken, even when we feel lost, we still have the power to choose hope, to choose healing, to choose to create a better world.
That's a beautiful thought. And I think that's a perfect place to wrap up this deep dive into Lamentations.
It has been quite a journey, from the depths of despair to those glimmers of hope.
And this idea that even in the face of unimaginable suffering, the human spirit can still find a way to rise above.
To find strength, to find meaning, to find hope. And, you know, I encourage our listeners, if you're intrigued by all of this.
Yeah, please.
Pick up a copy of Lamentations, read it for yourselves and see what resonates with you. You might be surprised by what you discover.
You might just find some wisdom that speaks to your own life, your own struggles.
Exactly. And it might just give you a new perspective on how to navigate the complexities of our modern world.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. It's been a real pleasure exploring these powerful themes with you.
The pleasure's all mine. And until next time, keep exploring.
And keep those minds working.
Yeah, it's like this roadmap, you know, not for avoiding suffering, but for navigating it.
For facing it head on.
Exactly. With honesty, with a willingness to learn from those mistakes.
And that's what makes Lamentations so relevant today, even thousands of years later.
Oh, absolutely. It speaks to something universal, doesn't it?
It really does.
This human struggle to make sense of suffering. You
know, find meaning in the pain.
Yeah. and to confront the darkness both within ourselves and in the world around us.
And to ultimately come out on the other side with a renewed sense of hope.
Because there is hope, even in the midst of all that despair.
Speaking of hope, Dr. Allen, he ends his lecture with a bit of a cliffhanger, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, he does.
He mentions that the next session will cover verses 17 through 22.
Which, if I remember correctly, offer a glimpse of hope for the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to think that even after all this devastation, there's still that possibility.
It's a testament to the resilience of the human spirit, isn't it?
It really is. So as we wrap up this deep dive, what are some of the key takeaways for our listeners?
Well, I think Lamentations reminds us that suffering is a part of life. We can't avoid it.
It's inevitable, in a way.
But it also shows us that even in the darkest moments, there's room for hope, for growth, for a brighter future.
And maybe, just maybe, by acknowledging our own role in the suffering we see around us.
By taking responsibility, by seeking forgiveness.
We can start to heal those wounds, both individual and collective.
And maybe we can start to build a world where lamentations like these are no longer necessary.
That's a beautiful thought. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into Lamentations. It's been a heavy, but ultimately, I think, a hopeful journey.
I agree. And I want to encourage all of our listeners to explore Lamentations for yourself, see what resonates with you, what insights you might find.
You might be surprised by what you discover.
Absolutely. And maybe it'll even give you a new perspective on how to navigate the challenges of our world today.
It's definitely given me a lot to think about. Thanks again for joining us, everyone. And until next time, keep exploring.
And keep those minds working.